Anyone remember anything from yesterday's class? And what happened in the wonderful Bhagavatam yesterday?
Every day
we chant 6 verses to glorify the bodies.
Did he chant 6 or 5? There are 6 verses there.
But well, I think it's actually...
5 is glorify, and 1 is the obeisances.
But those 5 are especially prominent.
There he glorifies them as excelling Lakshmi and glorifies their Ruha Bhava as aspired to by the liberated, those aspiring for liberation, and the Salakas. And he says that he wants to become a plant in Vrindavan to be covered by their foot dust.
It was interesting how he said that he aspired for that, and then later on he changed his mind. He thought it was too advanced for him. So instead of aspiring directly for that service, he aspired to have the dust of their lotus feet. Such humility. But also that shows us how high the position of the Braja Gopis is. Anyone else remember something?
Krishna purposely separated from the gopis to increase their love.
Increase their love. Their feelings of separation. And therefore that feeling of separation causes them to access the uppercut lila. That has to be increased and increased. And even on the level of the gopis, it was Krishna decided to increase it, which is quite amazing. Anyone else remember anything?
Just by offering something to Krishna, she reaches up the association with the Lord.
What did she offer? And that piety was so amazingly potent that even though she was a serving girl, yes.
And she made the mistake of wanting to keep Krishna for herself. It wasn't actually a devotional service. It was bhakti sukriti that she performed.
What was the bhakti sukriti?
The giving of the
scent.
Person.
Yes. But her wanting Krishna for herself, she was unfortunate enough because that wasn't exactly devotional service, but she was unfortunate because Krishna was never going to do that. So that's why, if I remember correctly, she was called Durvaga, I think. She wasn't going to get her desire. Thank you. Yes?
Krishna is so merciful that he fulfills desires of everyone. He fulfills the desire of Kuja.
Yeah. What to speak of? That was Srila Srinaswami's comment on the first verse of that 48th chapter, that I will satisfy the desires of Kubja. What to speak of the Braja Gopikas? I cannot resist her. What to speak of the Braja Gopikas? Anyone else remember anything?
And so the Brajavasis, they were curious to know this Govinda remembers
them. That was their sentiment. And what was the answer? Does Govinda remember them? He's not hard-hearted.
Gopis, they were learning the path of separation from Krishna.
And especially that night when Uddhava came back, Krishna spent all night thinking about burning in the fire of separation from Srimati Radharani. When he heard about her jalpa, her adivuddha mohana bhav, her chitra jalpa. Now, one thing that I've noted today, So yesterday we heard Uddhava glorifying the Braja Gopikas. So they have the highest position that even the great sages long or offer the dust of the Braja Gopikas feet. They take that upon their head. So their position is the highest position. Their consciousness is the highest. Their love is the purest. It's most intense. So there are other devotees as well. And yesterday we saw one of them, and that was Kubja. And what was Kubja's devotional service characterized by? In the sense of Chatur Vidha Bhajante Mam, that verse. What was the characteristic? Yeah, and she wanted something from Krishna, and she was performing devotional service to get that, and it was purified. So her devotional service doesn't compare with the Braja Gopika's devotional service, who wanted nothing other than Krishna's pleasure. So now we're going to meet another devotee who we've met already before. Previously, he had the task of carrying Krishna from Vrindavan, which the Brijbasis didn't appreciate at all, but that was his service. But he is also not on the level of the Braja Gopikas, because now we're discussing, really we're seeing the devotional service of Mathura. So first is Kubja and now Akura. So what is the characteristic of the gopis? Pure devotional service. They don't want anything but Krishna's pleasure, and of course in their own specific mood as beautiful young girls. But they only want Krishna's pleasure. And Kubja was a beautiful young girl, but it wasn't only Krishna's pleasure that she wanted. And now Akura, who's not a beautiful young girl at all, but let's see what he wants, and let's see what his devotional service is characterized by. So Akura will make it easy for us to understand him, or easier to understand him, because he's going to offer prayers. So first, let's see, that's page 20, verse. Yes. So here, starting in text 12. Then Lord Krishna, after there was one verse describing the foolishness of wanting material things in exchange for one's devotional service, mundane sense gratification. So that's considered poor intelligence in the words of this verse. But then in text 12, then Lord Krishna, wanting to have some things done, went to Akura's house with Balaram and Uddhav. The Lord also desired to please Akura. So interestingly enough, he went to Kubja's house with whom? With Uddhav, but Balaram couldn't go because the rasa was incompatible with Balaram's presence. But to visit Akura's house, Balaram and Uddhava went, and he had two reasons for going. He wanted something done. He had a mission. He wanted Akura to perform some service for him. And also he desired to please Akura because it was Akura's request that he come and visit him in his home. But he wanted some service. Akura was a devotee, a great devotee. And a great devotee will get his desire fulfilled, which is service. And Krishna was reciprocating with him. So the purport to text 12. The previous incident of Lord Krishna's visit to Trivakra's house and now his visit to Akura's gives a fascinating glimpse into the daily activities of Sri Krishna in Mathura city. 13 and 14. So Krishna, Balaram, and Uddhav walked into the house of Akura. And Akura stood up in great joy when he saw them, his own relatives and the greatest of exalted personalities coming from a distance. After embracing them and greeting them, Akura bowed down to Krishna and Balaram and was greeted by them in return. Then when his guests had taken their seats, he worshipped them in accordance with scriptural rules. So he greeted them properly. He had invited them to his house. He was overjoyed when they actually came. And he greeted them, as we'll read the purport here. Srila Jiva Goswami points out that Lord Sri Krishna and the others approached Akura in a friendly attitude. At first, Akura reciprocated that friendly mood. And then in the course of showing them hospitality, he adopted his natural devotional attitude toward the Lord, and thus he offered his obeisances to Sri Krishna and Sri Balaram. Why didn't he offer his obeisances to Uddhava? Yeah, and they were both members of the family, same family. So this is more on how Akura greeted Uddhav and Krishna and Balaram. O King, Akura bathed the feet of Lord Krishna and Lord Balaram and then poured the bath water on his head. He presented them with gifts of fine clothing, aromatic sandalwood paste, flower garlands, and excellent jewelry. After thus worshipping the two lords, he bowed his head to the floor. He then began to massage Lord Krishna's feet, placing them on his lap, and with his head bowed in humility, he addressed Krishna and Balaram as follows. Akura said, so here in 11 verses, there are prayers by Akura. Now, they're quite interesting, and try to also perceive what kind of a devotee Akura is. Akura said, it is our good fortune that you two lords have killed the evil Kamsa and his followers. I'll read all the prayers first. Thus delivering your dynasty from endless suffering and causing it to flourish. You are both the original supreme person, the cause of the universe and its very substance. Not the slightest subtle cause or manifest product of creation exists apart from you. O Supreme Absolute Truth, with your personal energies, you create this universe and then enter into it. Thus one can perceive you in many different forms by hearing from authorities and by direct experience. Just as the primary elements, earth and so on, manifest themselves in abundant variety among all the species of mobile and immovable life, so you, the one independent supreme soul, appear to be manifold among the variegated objects of your creation. You create, destroy, and also maintain this universe with your personal energies, the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness. Yet, you are never entangled by these modes or the activities they generate. Since you are the original source of all knowledge, what could ever cause you to be bound by illusion? Since it has never been demonstrated that you are covered by material bodily designations, it must be concluded that for you there is neither birth in a literal sense nor any duality. Therefore, you never undergo bondage or liberation, and if you appear to, it is only because of your desire that we see you in that way, was simply because of our lack of discrimination. You originally enunciated the ancient religious path of the Vedas for the benefit of the whole universe. Whenever that path became obstructed by wicked persons following the path of atheism, you assume one of your incarnations, which are all in the transcendental mode of goodness. You are that very same supreme person, my Lord, and you have now appeared in the home of Vasudeva with your plenary portion. You have done this to relieve the earth's burden of killing hundreds of armies led by kings who are expansions of the demigods' enemies, and also to spread the fame of our dynasty. Today, O Lord, my home has become most fortunate because you have entered it. As the supreme truth, you embody the forefathers, ordinary creatures, human beings, and demigods, and the water that has washed your feet purifies the three worlds. Indeed, O Transcendental One, you are the spiritual master of the universe. What learned person would approach anyone but you for shelter when you are the affectionate, grateful, and truthful well-wisher of your devotees? To those who worship you in sincere friendship, you reward everything they desire, even your own self, yet you never increase or diminish. It is by our great fortune, Janardana, that you are now visible to us. For even the masters of yoga and the foremost demigods can achieve this goal only with great difficulty. Please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for children, wife, wealth, influential friends, home and body. All such attachment is simply the effect of your illusory material energy. So those are the prayers of Sri Akura. Now let's just go over them one more time, just seeing the sort of the flow of the philosophy, and then we'll go over them more slowly and hear his exact words and hear some of the commentaries and purports. So first he's saying, it is our good fortune you have killed the evil Kamsa and his followers, thus delivering your dynasty from endless suffering and causing it to flourish. So not so much philosophy in that, rather he's just saying it's fortunate that the Lord has come to perform his pastimes. And then he starts with some philosophy, that you are the cause of all. Everything is caused by him, this person. But now he's speaking of the power of the Lord. You both, Krishna Balaram, are the original Supreme Person, the cause of the universe and its very substance. That means that he is the substance of the universe, because the pradhan comes from him. And he, the Purusha, there's Purusha and Pradhan, they both come from him. This is further to the realizations that he had when he directly saw Krishna and Balaram in the water of the Yamuna. So this is, he's just saying some different aspects of what he saw. Not the slightest subtle cause or manifest product of creation exists apart from you. Everything. You are the cause of everything, you too, because you are Pradhan and Purusha. O Supreme Absolute Truth, with your personal energies you create this universe and then enter into it. All the whole creation is done by Krishna and his energies. Thus, one can perceive you in many different forms by hearing from authorities and by direct experience. So all that one can perceive, the good instructions, hearing from authorities, and then by one's own perception, it is not separate from Krishna. It is maintained by him as he enters into the universe as Kiridakshai Vishnu. And he is the Upadan Karan, he is the ingrediential cause. The ingredients of the universe are him. And he's set into motion by his energies, his expanses, etc. An example. Just as the primary elements, earth and so on, manifest themselves in abundant varieties amongst all the species of mobile and immobile life. So all the elements are in the bodies of all the creatures, the moving stavaram and jagamam, and non-moving living entities. They are composed of all the elements which are coming from the primary element. So you, the one independent Supreme Soul, appear to be manifold among the various variegated objects of your creation. So there is earth, etc., and it takes so many different forms within so many different physical bodies of so many different species. So similarly, Krishna, the prime cause of everything, he takes so many different forms because his energy is manifest in the various objects of his creation. In other words, the same point, that he is the cause of all causes along with Balaram, and nothing is separate from him, and everything is a manifestation of him. You create, destroy, and also maintain this universe with your personal energies, the modes of passion, ignorance, and goodness. Yet, now here it's going to shift a little bit. There is this unlimitedly powerful person, but now, discussing his power, but now that he, the person who Akura is looking at, is not entangled by the modes of material nature, nor does he become entangled by any activities that he performs or they generate. Since you are the original source of knowledge, what could ever cause you to be bound by illusion? So that one would be a very strong point against Mayavad philosophy. How is it possible that the Lord could be Ishwara, in the sense that the Mayavadis conceive of Ishwara, which means Brahman, contaminated, controlled under the sway of Sattvagun, the mode of goodness. What to speak of the Jivas under the control of ignorance? How is it possible that the Lord in any way could be covered by his own energy, bound by illusion? So he's now speaking not only about the power of the Lord, but now he's starting to speak of the Lord's incarnation, or his avatar, his descent into the material world. Now he's going to explain this point even more far more deeply by explaining that it's not possible for Krishna to be an illusion, and therefore the question of him either being bound or liberated makes no sense, because it's not possible for him to be an illusion. So how could he become liberated? He's forever liberated, having nothing in full control over the modes. So 22, since it has never been demonstrated that you are covered by material bodily designations, it must be concluded that for you there is neither birth in a literal sense nor any duality. So there is no duality in what Krishna does. What does duality mean? Something is good, something is bad. Something is controlled by the mode of goodness, something is controlled by the mode of ignorance. But Krishna is not controlled by any of these forces. So in relationship to Krishna's braja pastimes, even though Akura is not directly stating it, it is completely clear from his words he doesn't really have access to braja's pastimes, even though he has so much knowledge and his philosophical understanding, tattvic understanding of Krishna is so perfect. But all the pastimes, the implication is that all the pastimes that Krishna performs in braja, his dealings with his parents, his dealings with the boys, his dealings especially with the braja gopikas, which Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said, the rasa dance was the topmost of pastimes. This has nothing to do with being impelled, pushed, forced by any of the modes of material nature, not passion, not ignorance, not goodness. So Krishna's advent, his avatar, is very difficult to understand for that reason, but Akura is explaining it. And therefore, you may never undergo bondage or liberation, and if you appear to, if in our vision we're seeing Krishna as acting in a way that is controlled by the modes of material nature, that appearance, or it is only because of your desire that we see you in that way, or simply because of our lack of discrimination. Why does Krishna desire? Why could he desire that we see him improperly? Because our consciousness isn't right. And that has placed us under the modes of material nature and caused our lack of discrimination, lack of understanding, and our great misunderstanding. So more about the incarnation of Krishna or the avatar of Krishna when he's in this world. You originally enunciated, spoke the ancient religious path of the Vedas for the benefit of the whole universe. Whenever that path becomes obstructed by wicked persons following the path of atheism, you assume one of your incarnations, which are all in the transcendental mode of goodness. They are Sattvagun, Vibharti, Bhavan, Tada Bhavan, Sattvagunam Vibharti. So you, O Lord, he's speaking about avatars in general, yada yada hidamasya glanaya bhavati bharata. But you, O Krishna, are that very same Supreme Person, my Lord. And you have now appeared in the home of Vasudev with your plenary portion, whose name is? Sankarshan, Baladev, Balaram, Rama. You have done this to relieve the earth's burden by killing hundreds of armies led by kings who are expansions of the demigods' enemies, and also to spread the fame of our dynasty. Right in the beginning, in the first verse of his prayers, he said, "It is our good fortune that you two lords have killed the evil Kamsa and his followers, thus delivering your dynasty." But here, he's saying, our dynasty, idam kulam, this dynasty, but now more personal. He's feeling part of it. He's feeling his relationship with Krishna, the fame of our dynasty. Oh, it's again, amusa, of this dynasty, and kulasya, yasha, vitanvan, spreading the fame of the others. So this is the purpose, he's saying, of Krishna. So he's in complete knowledge of Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord. And that Supreme Lord has entered his house, which is what he wanted. And because he's a devotee, he's happy for some service too, and he's going to get some service. But the Supreme Lord has entered his house, and he's completely aware of it. So therefore he says, "Today, O Lord, my home has become most fortunate because you have entered it." So in one sense, he's talking on such a great cosmic level of he's the cause of everything. And then it's, my home is fortunate because you, who is the cause of unlimited universes, etc., have entered my home, which is quite inconceivable because this home is part of the universe, certainly. And Krishna is the cause of that. And he enters into the universe and he enters into his home too. This is Krishna's causeless mercy. As the Supreme Truth, Param Satyam, you embody the forefathers, ordinary creatures, human beings and demigods. And the water that has washed your feet purifies the three worlds. Indeed, O Transcendent One, you are the spiritual master of the universe. And now, so this is, the second part was describing, first was just the glories of and power of Krishna, how he's unlimitedly powerful. Then the second section of the verses is how he incarnates and the purposes of his incarnation, and then just glorifying him, and then in 26 moving to another level, taking shelter of him. Once knowing Krishna as all-powerful, as an incarnate, as the avatar, Swayam Bhagavan avatar, then one should take shelter of him. And that is 26. What learned person would approach anyone but you for shelter? when you are the affectionate. So he has these qualities, affectionate. Not only is he so powerful, but he's affectionate. He's grateful and truthful, well-wisher of your devotees. So become a devotee. What does it mean to become a devotee? Fully place oneself under Krishna's protection and shelter. To those who worship you in sincere friendship, how do you reciprocate? You reward everyone, everything they desire, even your own self. Yet, you never increase or diminish. By accepting devotees and their offerings, you don't increase. And by giving them what they desire, even up to giving his own self, he neither increases nor decreases. And then in 27, the final verse, it is, and where he asks for something, he says, it is by our great fortune, Janardana, that you are now visible to us. For even the masters of yoga and the foremost demigods can achieve this goal only with great difficulty, and it is only by mercy, it is only by fortune. Please quickly, and now he's asking for something. First he says he's fortunate, then he asks, please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for children, wife, wealth, influential friends, home and body. All these illusory attachments. And he has been cut, and he's later on we'll hear, today, we'll hear how he's going, this is the message that he's going to bring to Dhritarashtra, because these family attachments are causing Dhritarashtra to act against the Lord's own devotees, and the family attachment is to, especially to Duryodhana. So all such attachment is simply the effect of your illusory material energy. So what type of a devotee is he? Is he one with great material desires that he wants fulfilled? It doesn't appear that way. He doesn't appear to be curious either. And he doesn't appear to be in great distress. He appears to be one who has great transcendental knowledge. Knowledge of Krishna and his relationship with Krishna. He's actually a devotee. But see how dominant his knowledge is. While the Braja Gopikas, sometimes they'll say things like this, or the residents of Vrindavan, sometimes they become aware of Krishna's Aishwarya, but their Madhurya is so powerful. The sweet mood of their loving him is so strong that it is never overwhelmed by their knowledge of his his position, his all-powerful position. But Akura, he's very reverential, therefore. So how does Krishna deal with him? We shall find out in a moment, but let's just go over these prayers one more time. Quite wonderful prayers. But a very different Mathuravasi devotee than Kubja, Jivakra. So, 18, basically he's explaining that nothing subtle or gross exists separate from Krishna. Then in 19, O Supreme Absolute Truth, with your personal energies you create this universe, then enter into it. Thus one can perceive you in many different forms. By hearing from authorities and by direct experience, we can directly experience all the forms. We'll just read the second paragraph of the purport. Throughout these chapters of Srimad Bhagavatam, we also observe one of the unique, extraordinary features of this great work. Whether Krishna is sending his message to the gopis or accepting the prayers of Akura, there is constant philosophical discussion. Throughout the Bhagavatam, the steady combination of fascinating pastimes with persistent spiritual philosophy is an extraordinary feature. We are allowed to glimpse and even relish the spiritual emotions of the Lord and His liberated associates, and yet we are constantly reminded of their ontological position, lest we lapse into cheap anthropomorphic vision or seeing that Krishna is an ordinary person like us. Thus, it is entirely in character with the work that Akura, in his ecstasy, glorifies the Lord with precise philosophical prayers. Then 20. Just as the primary elements, earth and so on, manifest themselves in abundant variety amongst all species of mobile and immobile life, so you, the one independent Supreme Lord, appear to be manifold among the variegated objects of your creation. This is an analogy how the one manifests as many. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's short comment to text 20. This verse uses an analogy to explain how manifold varieties expand from one Lord. Because there is one Lord, still variety comes from Him. So this hearing Akura's prayers makes the Vrindavan pastimes even seem more wonderful, most wonderful, because these are all true. And yet see how Krishna acted in Vrindavan. The one Lord playing with His energies in such an extraordinary, seemingly simple way. Just as material bodies, this is the analogy, as Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, just as material bodies are manifest with various forms from the causal material elements like earth and water, so you, the one independent Atmatantra Lord, become many as the multitude of visible objects in this universe. 21. You create, destroy, and maintain this universe with your personal energy. This is so wonderful. Because He does create. He does destroy not only the universe, but innumerable universes. And not only that, He maintains the universes as well. It is by His glance the universe is created and maintained. If for one moment Krishna withdrew His maintaining potency, then it would cease to exist. And that same Lord, who everything in existence, His Sandini Shakti rests on, that same Lord is entering the house of Akura. So therefore, Akura is naturally quite overwhelmed. But not only that, He's entered the pasturing fields of Braja and walked on the land of Brajabhumi. He's a person, but He's an unlimitedly powerful person, inconceivable as it is for our finite consciousness to perceive. He's an unlimitedly powerful person, and what He does is not impelled by the modes of material nature, because the modes of material nature are firmly under His control. He acts as He desires according to His own intention. 21. You create, destroy, and also maintain the universe with your personal energies, the three modes, but you are never entangled in these modes or the activities they generate. So when Krishna deals in this world, even though the world is under the control of the modes of material nature, Krishna Himself nor His interactions have anything to do with the modes. Because Krishna actually doesn't deal with this world. He doesn't do that. He doesn't touch His material energy at all. It stands far apart Him. Krishna Balajamanam Abhimukhe Cha Balajamanam. The material energy cannot come before Krishna any more than darkness can stand in the presence of light. So important these points, especially after the conclusion of Krishna's Braja Leela, So this gives us a retrospective viewpoint on everything that Krishna has done that we personally witnessed by the mercy of Sukadev Goswami and the Acharyas. We were able to witness his transcendental pastimes. And we say transcendental pastimes and we can say it. And this is what it means, that they have nothing to do with the material world. They are being enacted by his will only. So they are very wonderful because this is what he wills. He is the most wonderful and this is what he desires to do. So naturally when the most wonderful does something, it's going to be a most wonderful activity. So he's never touched by the modes of material nature. To text 21, Srila Sridhar Swami comments, the Lord may object, wouldn't it be said, or couldn't it be said, that my being the agent of creation and so on, and my being situated in the mode of goodness, doesn't it seem that I'm bound up just like an ordinary living entity is? And then this verse replies, not at all, not at all. As stated in the verse beginning, Sri Jasi, by its modes or else by its activities, you are not at all bound, since there is never at any time for you the cause of bondage, namely ignorance. This cannot happen. Why? This is answered in this verse by the words Gyanatmana, meaning because of not being, you are not covered by Maya. You are not touched by Maya. Maya cannot stand before you. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Akura said, therefore you are the one Supreme Lord of the universe. You are not bound up like the living entities by karma and the three modes of nature. Krishna replies, how is it? How could I not be not bound up? Akura answered, as you are the embodiment of knowledge, Gyanatmana, what is the question of you being bound up by ignorance? Ignorance exists for the living entities, but not for you. 22. The verse describing how you are never under the control of the modes of nature. And again, it is so important that we retrospectively view Krishna's pastimes as simply a product of his desire and nothing to do with the modes of material nature. So it is never demonstrated that Krishna is covered either by a material body or covered by anybody, or is material, therefore there is no birth for you in a strict sense, like living entities are born. Therefore you never undergo bondage or liberation, even if you appear to, it seems like you do, it is due to our lack of discrimination. Of course the Vrijbasis didn't see like this, that it is due to our lack of discrimination, but this is from the viewpoint of knowledge. The purport. Here, Akura states two reasons why the Lord appears to be covered by a material form or to take birth like a human being. First, when Lord Krishna executes his pastimes, his loving devotees think of him as their beloved child, friend, lover, and so on. In the ecstasy of this loving reciprocation, they do not think of Krishna as God. For example, because of her extraordinary love for him, Mother Yasoda worries that Krishna will be injured in the forest. That she feels this way is the desire of the Lord, which is here indicated by the word nikama. The second reason that the Lord may appear material is indicated by the word avivheka, simply because of ignorance, a lack of discrimination. One may misunderstand the position of the personality of Godhead. In the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam and the Lord's discussion with Sri Uddhav, the Lord elaborately discusses his transcendental position beyond bondage and liberation. As stated in Vedic literature, deha dehi vibhagayam nishvare vidyate kvachit. There is never a distinction of body and soul in the Supreme Lord. In other words, Sri Krishna's body is eternal, spiritual, omniscient, and the reservoir of all pleasure. 23. He says that you are the one, you've come. The reason of your advent is to Puritranaya, Sadunam, Vinishyaya, Daskritam, etc. That is why you come as your avatar, and all your descents are transcendental. And Sridhar Swami gives a short comment. But then, are not my incarnations and their activities imaginary products of illusion, like the Mayavadis say? Just like the appearance of silver in an oyster? No, no. They are simply your pastimes, as stated in the two verses beginning Tvoditaha, which is 23 and 24. And then 24. You are that same Supreme Person, my Lord, and you have now appeared in the home of Vasudev with your plenary portion, Balaram. And why have you done this? To relieve the earth's burden by killing hundreds of armies led by kings who were expansions of the demigods' enemies, and also to spread the fame of our dynasty. Purport here, the term Saretaram Sarajnam indicates that the demoniac kings slain by Krishna were in fact expansions or incarnations of the enemies of the demigods. This fact is elaborately explained in the Mahabharata, which reveals the specific identities of the demoniac kings. And Srila Sridhar Swami, no, we won't read that. And then 25. Today, O Lord, my home has been most fortunate. Moving into the third part of his prayers, and we could say his asking for a benediction is the final one part. You've come to my home, and you are the spiritual master of the universe. Purport. Srila Sridhar Swami has nicely interpreted Akura's feelings as follows. Akura said, my Lord, although I am a householder, today my home has become more pious than the forest where sages perform austerities. Why? Simply because you have entered my home. Indeed, you are the personification of the deities who preside over the five sacrifices a householder must perform daily to atone for unavoidable violence committed to living beings in the home. You are the spiritual truth behind all these creations, and now you have entered my home. So again, so inconceivably wonderful that this all-powerful person who everything comes from enters the home of anyone, or he awards his association. And then 26. What learned person would take shelter of anyone but you when you are the affectionate, grateful, truthful, well-wisher of your devotees? So what to do with this knowledge? This is Gyanamamam Prapadyante Vasudeva Savami Iti Sa Mahatma Sadolava. When one has this knowledge of Krishna's position, one should take it to the point of faithful, trusting surrender and placing ourselves in his hands. Because, why? He is the affectionate, grateful, and truthful well-wisher of your devotees. And to those who worship you in sincere friendship, how does Krishna reciprocate? You reward them everything they desire. And because of his power, he has the potency to be able to do that, even up to the point of awarding his own self. And in doing all this, he neither increases nor decreases. We'll read the purport here. This verse describes both the Lord and his devotees as Sudhida, well-wishers. The Lord is the well-wisher of his devotee, and the devotee lovingly desires all happiness for the Lord. Even in this world, an excess of love may sometimes produce unnecessary solicitude. For example, we often observe that a mother's loving concern for her adult child is not always justified by an actual danger to the child. A grown child may be wealthy, competent, and healthy, and yet the mother's loving concern continues. Similarly, a pure devotee always feels loving concern for Lord Krishna, as exemplified by Mother Yasoda, who can only think of Krishna as her beautiful son. Lord Krishna had promised Akura that after killing Kamsa, he would visit his home, and now the Lord has kept his promise. Akura recognizes this and glorifies the Lord as Ritagira, one who is true to his word. The Lord is Kritagya, grateful for whatever little worship a devotee offers, and even if the devotee forgets what he has done, the Lord does not. So that's very reassuring practically the conclusion of Akura's prayers, that he's describing the Lord's very magnanimous nature, especially in relationship to those who serve him, his devotees. 26. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's comment. What learned person would surrender to anyone other than you, who are true to your word, Ritagira, having kept your promise to come to my house after killing Kamsa? You are the Suridha, the well-wisher of your devotees, and act accordingly. You act for their benefit, that means. You are Kritagya, very grateful for whatever little worship a devotee offers, and even if the devotee forgets, you do not. As the friend... And it's interesting how the gopis were indirectly accusing when Krishna left them. In the Rasa dance, they accused him of akritagya, being akritagya or ungrateful. Indirectly by saying there are four different kinds of lovers. Which one are you? And one of them is this akritagya. But Krishna is very grateful for whatever little worship a devotee offers. And even if the devotee forgets, you do not. As the friend of he whose mind is spotless and free from material desires, and he who worships you in friendship, you give whatever he desires. Even if they do not desire something, you also give that. Though you give so much, you are not finished, for you give even yourself. Krishna may object, but if I give even myself, will I not be left with nothing? And Akura answers, no, no you will not. For you there is never increase or decrease. Even though all the objects in millions of universes are brought to you as offerings by millions of Brahmas and other demigods, still you do not increase. And though you give everything to your devotees, including even yourself, you do not decrease. This is because you possess inconceivable, unlimited energy, and he has just played just as he likes in Braja, reciprocating with his topmost devotees. And then the final verse, and then we move on with his prayers. It is our great fortune, Janardhan. So I'm approaching you for shelter, as he said, you the unlimited Lord, I'm approaching you for shelter. And what do you want? It is our great fortune, Janardana, that you are now visible to us. For even the masters of yoga and the foremost demigods can achieve this goal only with great difficulty. It is very rare, exceptionally rare. Please, his request, please quickly cut the ropes of our illusory attachment for children, wife, wealth, influential friends, home, and last, but not least, body. All such attachment is simply the effect of your illusory material energy. Because of identification with these objects, we become attached because we see them as the source of our pleasure, and naturally one becomes attached to that which one perceives as the source of one's pleasure. And then we supplant the ahankar, the sense of ahankar, on all objects and that are the source of our pleasure and we identify with And that, so me expands into mine. Okay. So Akura has offered his prayers, and Krishna's response is quite wonderful. Thus worshipped and fully glorified by his devotee, the Supreme Lord Hari smilingly addresses Akura, completely charming him with his words. So how is he going to respond to Akura and these wonderful words that he has offered? And Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur comments that he's going to bewilder Akura by displaying, increasing his awareness, not even displaying, but increasing his awareness of some of his opulences. So that happened many, 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 many times in Braja. Every time Krishna would hold up, he held up Govardhan Hill, and everyone was aware of Krishna's opulence, and he killed this asura and that asura, and everyone was aware of Krishna's opulence. But never did they become bewildered or their love for him decreased in any way. But here, Krishna is doing this to Akura, and look what he's going to say and how he's going to charm him and how sweetly he speaks to him. He says to Akura, "You are our spiritual master." Akura has just explained that Krishna is the source of everything. And Krishna speaks very sweetly, and he asks him to please cut our liberation, our bondage. He's a devotee, but he's seeing that this is practically the purpose of Krishna's coming to his home is what? Cut our bondage to these very things. Your purpose in coming here is to cut my bondage. But Krishna has a different view of his purpose to come there. He's going to take Akura's pulling and push back with it. Akura wants, as when one has the tendency on the jnana side, one tends to have desires for liberation, and that's what Akura has prayed for, just the cutting. But he's a devotee, an exalted devotee, but Krishna doesn't want to, he hasn't come there to liberate him from his family attachment, etc. He's come there because he wants some service from him. He who knows everything already still wants some service from Akura, and that's going to be his fortune, that he gets the opportunity to render service. So he says very charmingly, Krishna says to Akura, after Akura has finished his prayers, "You are our spiritual master, our paternal uncle and praiseworthy friend, and we are like your sons, always dependent on your protection, sustenance, and compassion. Exalted souls like you are the true object of service and most worshipable authorities for those who desire the highest goal in life. Demigods, you are more worshipable and worthy of accepting service than demigods, because you're a devotee." And there's a very nice point that Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur is going to make about why this is actually true. And the verse says it, "Demigods are generally concerned with their own interest. So the one to really serve is the saintly devotees, because their concern is not swartha, it is not selfish. But saintly devotees are never concerned with their own interest, they are concerned with the interest of others." Krishna said, this is the purport, "O Akura, even from the ordinary point of view, you deserve our honor. But from the transcendental perspective, you are most worshipable because you are a first-class Vaishnava." This is stated in this verse. Krishna said, "Among those worthy of worship, you are most worshipable." Akura replied, "But isn't it a well-established fact that men should worship the demigods?" Krishna. The demigods are basically self-interested, swartha, but the devotees are not. They are primarily interested in benefiting others. 31. No one can deny that there are holy places with sacred rivers, or that the demigods appear in deity forms made of earth and stone. But these purify the soul only after a long time, whereas saintly persons purify just by being seen. Tirtha Bhutana Tirthani Tirtha Kormanti Tirthani Svantastena Gadabritaha. Because the saintly devotees carry the Lord in the heart, they are places of pilgrimage. So Narottama Das Thakur, he explains this in what song? The same point? He bara koruna kori. That's Narottama, yes? Who has, why don't you look up that song? Just read it. Could you look it up? Oh no. And the Yamuna isn't even deep enough for you to drown yourself in. What would you do? Describing the Ganga can purify one after a long time, but a Vaishnava, just by having his darshan, the heart is purified, one is completely purified. So how? So he's saying something that Narottama Das Thakur has made into a wonderful song. Akura replied, "Are not the holy waters worthy of worship?" Shaking his head, Krishna said, "No, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. No, though certainly the holy waters and the demigods purify, but that is very different from the purification through the devotee. The holy waters give purification by prolonged service, but the devotees give purification just by seeing them. You are indeed our best of friends." So he's glorifying Akura from both mundane, physical, relational point of view, and also from the transcendental point of view, that Akura is a great devotee. "You are indeed the best of our friends. So please go to Hastinapur." And as go to Hastinapur as the well-wisher of the Pandavas and find out how they are doing. So So Krishna is saying, because Akura says, "I want to take shelter of you so that you can liberate me." And Krishna says, "No, I want to take shelter of you. You are in the superior position because you're in a devotee. You're a devotee, and also from the material point of view, you're my uncle." So Krishna just turns it around. "I want something of you." Because everyone comes to Krishna wanting something of him. And then Krishna turns it around and says, "You came to me to get something from me, but guess what? I want something from you." And what does he want from Akura? He wants him to see how the Pandavas are doing. And now the Pandavas enter the picture, so to speak. And how is Akura going to react? He's not going to say, "But I wanted something for you. That's why I'm taking shelter of you. Why are you asking me to do something?" No, because he's a devotee. He's so happy to have some service for Krishna. And he performs it very, very well. Find out how they are doing. Text 32. The purport. Short purport. In Sanskrit, the imperative "you go" may be rendered as gachasva or gacha. In the second of these cases, the word following gacha, namely sva, which is taken in the vocative sense, indicates Krishna's addressing Akura as "our own." This is a reference to Lord Krishna's intimate relationship with his uncle. So he's bewildering Akura, he's taking away all his reverence and said, "Now you do something, you're our uncle." And it's an order, "you go." It's in the imperative. He's giving him an order. He gets an order from Krishna. Krishna is telling him what to do. "Please go." O uncle, for their benefit. Being a devotee, because you are our well-wisher, being our uncle, and because you act for others' welfare, being a devotee, you should do this. Go to Hastinapur for your benefit. It may also be taken as Gachaswa, O relative. Swa, uncle, please go for their benefit. And then the last four verses. We have heard that when their father passed away, the young Pandavas were brought with their anguished mother to the capital city by King Dhritarashtra, and that they are now living there. Indeed, this is 34, weak-minded Dhritarashtra, the son of Ambika, has become under the control of his wicked sons, and therefore that blind king is not treating his brother's sons fairly. Go and see whether Dhritarashtra is acting properly or not. When we find out, we will make the necessary arrangements to help our dear friends. And it was especially, he's become wicked, his wicked sons, Duryodhana, and he had, in Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, Sridhar Swami rather, he explains that Dhritarashtra had the tendency, due to his weak-mindedness and wickedness, to fall under the bad and evil influences of others, such as Karna. Indeed, weak-minded Dhritarashtra, the son of Ambika, has come under the control of his wicked sons, and therefore that blind king is not treating his brother's son fairly. Go and see whether Dhritarashtra is acting properly or not. When we find out, we will make the necessary arrangements to help our dear friends. And Sukadeva Goswami continues, thus fully instructing Akura, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, then returned to his residence, accompanied by Lord Shankarshan and by Uddhava. Without further ado, we shall continue and enter into this mission of Akura in the next chapter. This is 49, chapter 49. Palace Intrigue. Sukadeva Goswami said, Akura went to Hastinapur, the city distinguished by the glories of the Paurava rulers. There he saw Dhritarashtra, Bhishma, Vidura, and Kunti, along with Bhalika and his son Somadatta. He also saw Dronacharya, Kripacharya, Karna, Duryodhana, Ashwatthama, the Pandavas, and other close friends. Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur's comment to 1 and 2. This chapter describes Akura's visit to Hastinapur and his return to Mathura after learning about Dhritarashtra's ill treatment of the Pandavas. The phrase, marked with fame, Yasho Antikam, means that the rulers of the Puru dynasty had constructed many temples and homes for the Brahmins. Akura saw Dhritarashtra, Bhalika with his son Somadatta, Drona, Kripa, and the rest. 3. So we've shifted so quickly from Braja, and now we're in Hastinapur, and we're into the Mahabharata stories, coming to the Kurukshetra, with Krishna's plan being enacted to reinstate Yudhisthira. After Akura, the son of Gandini, had appropriately greeted all his relatives and friends, they asked him for news of their family members, and he in turn asked about their welfare. He asked them about their welfare and their well-being. He remained in Hastinapur for several months to scrutinize the conduct of the weak-willed king. He had bad sons and was inclined to give in to the whims of mischievous advisors such as Karna. So this was his fault too. He had faults. He wasn't just innocent. Kunti and Vidura's description to Akura in detail described to Akura in detail the evil intentions of Dhritarashtra's sons, who could not tolerate the great qualities of Kunti's sons, such as their powerful influence, their military skill, their physical strength, their bravery, their humility, or the intense affection the citizens had for them. Kunti and Vidura also told Akura about how the sons of Dhritarashtra had tried to poison the Pandavas and carried out other such plots. So they were in such a difficult circumstance. And they were the devotees. Now, Akura has just said that look how Krishna treats his devotees. He's completely truthful. He reciprocates even with a little bit of service. He's grateful. He's kritagya. He's so affectionate. And now the first people we're going to see in response is the Pandavas who are suffering so greatly. So how is this Krishna's affection? Or rather, when we take up our devotional service, do we expect Krishna's affection and his reciprocation to come exactly in the way that we want, according to our plan and our scheme of how life should go so that we become happy, etc.? No, Krishna has his own way of dealing. And with these great devotees, the Pandavas, as we saw with all the residents of Vrindavan, but specifically the Braja Gopikas, that when they are Krishna's devotees, regardless of how Krishna deals with them, regardless of how Krishna deals with them, they are Krishna's devotees. They are fixed. They are perfectly fixed, and their consciousness neither shudders or quivers from their shelter of Krishna's lotus feet. This is their characteristic, and everything works out as it did also for Parikit Maharaj, as it did also for even Vritrasura. Krishna's plans are very hard to fathom. Bhishma Dev has said this. But here we're going to find the Pandavas, Krishna's great devotees, in difficulty. And Krishna the all-knowing Lord has said, when I find out from you, I need you to tell me what is the situation, and then I shall make my own plans. That was text 4. 5, around the 5 to 6. Seven. Kunti Devi, taking advantage of her brother Akura's visit, approached him confidentially. While remembering her birthplace, she spoke with tears in her eyes. So there's four verses that she speaks here. So we'll read those and then we'll end there. Kunti Devi said, "O gentle one," talking to whom? Akura. "Do my parents, brothers, sisters, nephews, family women, and girlhood friends still remember us? Does my nephew, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Bhatreo Bhagavan Krishna, does my nephew Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and his and the compassionate shelter of his devotees, does he still remember his aunt's sons? And does lotus-eyed Ram, Balaram, remember them also? Now that I'm suffering in the midst of my enemies like a doe in the midst of wolves, will Krishna come to console me and my fatherless sons with his words?" Krishna, Krishna, Mahayogin, Vishvatma Vishvabhavana, Prapanam Pahigovinda, Shishubis Chavashidatim. Krishna, Krishna, O great yogi, O supreme soul and protector of the universe, O Govinda, please protect me, who have surrendered to you. I and my sons are being overwhelmed by trouble. For persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no shelter other than your liberating lotus feet, for you are the Supreme Lord. So why is she taking shelter of Krishna? I mean, she's exalted devotee, but in distress. So it's very interesting that everyone has their being pushed to Krishna's lotus feet by material desires, by their jnana, by their distress. And then Nama Krishnaya Sudaya Brahmane Paramatmane Yogeshwaraya Yogaya Twamaham Saranam Gata. So this is the precursor to Kunti Devi's wonderful prayers in the 8th chapter of the first canto. Similar mood. I offer my obeisances unto you, or similar knowledge of Krishna's position. I offer my obeisances unto you, Krishna. And this is why Krishna was attracted to Kunti Devi and her sons, because they were such great devotees, unflinching devotees. I offer my obeisances unto you, Krishna, the Supreme Pure, the Absolute Truth, and the Super Soul, the Lord of pure devotional service, and the source of all knowledge. I have come to you for shelter. So that's why she's coming in her distress. She's coming for Krishna. We'll just read a few comments on this. On text 11, Krishna Krishna Mahayogin Vishvatma Vishvabhavana Prapanam Pahigovinda Shushabhis Cha Vashilatim. Krishna Krishna, great yogi, O Supreme Soul and Protector of the Universe, O Govinda, please protect me who have surrendered to you. I and my sons are being overwhelmed by trouble. Purport. Since Lord Krishna maintains the entire universe, thought Kunti Devi, surely he can protect our family. The word avasidatim indicates that Kunti Devi was overwhelmed by troubles, thus exhausted. She was helplessly taking shelter of Sri Krishna. In her prayers in the first canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Kunti admits that all these troubles were actually a blessing, for they forced her to always be intensely Krishna conscious. Mishra Chakravarti Thakur, short comment. The words Mahayogin, great yogi, imply even though you are situated in Mathura, you can hear my words of lamentation. O soul of the universe, Vishvatma, being also in my heart, you can certainly hear me. Vishvabhavana, protector of the universe, implies you protect the whole universe, so what trouble is it for you to protect me? O Govinda, pleasure of the senses, please become visible before my eyes so that I may admire you. And then 12, for persons fearful of death and rebirth, I see no other shelter than your liberating lotus feet, for you are the Supreme Lord. And then 13, I offer my obeisances. She offers her obeisances. Nama Krishnaya Sudhaya Brahmane Paramatmane Yogeshwaraya Yogaya Tamaham Sharanam Gata. I offer my obeisances unto you, O Krishna, the Supreme Pure, the Absolute Truth, and the Super Soul, the Lord of pure devotional service and the source of all knowledge. I have come to you for shelter. We'll read the comment of Srila Sridhar Swami to text 13. Oops. No, we'll read the purport rather. Srila Sridhar Swami has translated the word yogaya as unto Krishna, the source of knowledge. The word yoga indicates connection and also the means to achieve something. As conscious souls, we have a connection with the Supreme Soul through bhakti or devotion. Through that relationship, we experience perfect knowledge of the Supreme Soul. Since the Supreme Soul is the Absolute Truth, perfect knowledge of Him means perfect knowledge of everything. As stated in the Mundaka Upanishad, Kasmin Bhagavo Vigyate Savamidam Vigyatam Bhavati. When the Absolute is understood, everything is understood. Thus Lord Krishna Himself, as a spiritual by His spiritual potency, establishes our connection with Him. And that connection is the source of all spiritual knowledge. Thus Acharya Sridhar, by His thoughtful translation, stimulates us to a deeper understanding of Krishna conscious philosophy. Thus Lord Krishna Himself, by His spiritual potency, establishes our connection with Him. And that connection is the source of spiritual knowledge. Okay, we'll stop here and then we'll meet, and Krishna willing, we shall finish this 49th chapter when we return. And very interesting how the chapter concludes after seeing all these devotees, and then Kura is going to speak to Dhritarashtra, and we'll hear Dhritarashtra's reply. So we're getting a little somewhat of a summary of the Bhagavad Gita. So here are the Sukritanas, and Dhritarashtra is going to act as if he's a Duskritina and not surrender to Krishna's desire. Okay, Hare Krishna. So exactly 12:30. Srimad Bhagavatam Kide, Srila Prabhupada Kide.